All right, we're ready. I call the January 21, 2020 regular board meeting of the Glencoe Park District to order. Lisa, please call the roll and note the time.
7:02. Commissioner Boren?
Yes.
Commissioner Covey?
Here.
Commissioner Ludden?
Here.
Commissioner Underdonk?
Here.
President Brooks?
Here. Okay, on to consent agenda items. A through E are routine. We need a recommended motion. Does any commissioner want any item pulled from consent agenda?
No.
Okay.
Moved and Boren second.
Roll call vote, please.
Commissioner Boren?
Yes.
Commissioner Covey?
Yes.
Commissioner Ludden?
Yes.
Commissioner Underdonk?
Yes.
President Brooks?
Yes. Okay. Matters from the public. The practice of the board not to address questions, but to allow any visitor, any resident to talk. We take the comments under advisement. Okay. Let me know if you don't hear this. 3 minutes. I will just kind of, because there's enough of you, sometimes we go over a little bit. I'll just sort of raise my hand to signal you that you've reached the 3 minutes so you can kind of wrap it up. We'll take one of you after the other. It's not a Q&A. It's a time to make comments for the board. This will be about Park 7N. And the Glencoe Historical Society will speak on the issue first or second. We're going to do that second.
We're going to do second.
Okay.
Yeah,
so we're going to entertain comments first, and then
from any issue not for the cottage.
Oh. So, if anyone is here to speak on an issue other than Park 7N or the Booth Cottage, this would be the time to take your 3 minutes. Please just, state your name.
Sure.
Okay.
Hi, my name is Jim Carper. I'm a Glencoe resident on Vernon Avenue, and I'd like to address the board on its snow and ice removal policies. I know that the board is very diligent about cleaning around Takeoff, and they do a very good job on the parking lot. They do the trail around behind Takeoff, but they come up to the sidewalk and they stop. There's a sheet of ice down by the railroad tracks, and I would ask that the park district be a good neighbor and clean the sidewalk from the parking lot entrance all the way down to the railroad tracks. There's a lot of your customers that come in this way. There's parents pushing strollers. There's commuters walking out of the metro station. There's dog walkers. And I see no reason why, as long as the park district has its equipment out, its snowblowers and its plows, why they can't do the whole thing from the railroad tracks up to the sidewalk. I've been told in the past, because I've complained about this, that you don't have the time to do it, but I can't imagine that you don't have 3 minutes to run a machine the length of the sidewalk. Be a good neighbor and clear the sidewalk from the driveway entrance all the way to the railroad tracks. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. And not to worry, there will be a time set aside for comments regarding Park 7A. We're just doing other issues. Does anyone have any other comments on issues other than the Booth Cottage and 7A? All right, we're going to move on to the presentation by the Glencoe Historical Society regarding the request to lease a portion of Park 7A for the placement of the Frank Lloyd Wright Booth Cottage. Lisa Shepherd is our executive director, and she will introduce Ed Goodale, who is the president of the Glencoe Historical Society, who will make a presentation.
All right, just really quick before we go, I introduce Ed. Just a reminder that we're bringing forward Glencoe Historical Society has requested an agreement to use a portion of Park 7N located in Maple Hill and Meadow Road for the relocation of Frank Lloyd Wright Booth Cottage. The proposal is for a 99-year land lease of a small portion of Park 7N, measuring approximately 64 feet by 28 feet for a 900-square-foot cottage. The neighbors were notified of this meeting. 78 letters were handed out to the neighbors, and we addressed the park's right here. We addressed this whole area down here and hand-delivered letters on white envelopes with big yellow mailing labels, so they were hopefully noticed. We also shared it with our email blast, both through the village and the park district, and through social media. Emails that were sent in for people that could not attend the meeting were shared with the board prior to this meeting. I'd like to introduce Ed Goodale, the president of the Glencoe Historical Society. No, just pop your presentation up.
Thank you, Lisa. Can everybody hear me? How about I get really close? Is that enough?
No, you can take
it
out too.
Okay. How about now?
Take it out.
Okay. Hold it by your mouth, please.
Take it out and hold it. That'll be.
Can I do? Okay. All right. I'm Ed Goodale. I'm the president of the Historical Society. I want to very quickly introduce the other folks here in the front that are from the Booth Cottage Committee and assisting us. In the front row, we have Dan Creedy, who is our civil engineer. We have Scott Jabora, who is a GHS board member and also on our committee. We have Tony Brzezinka, who is a GHS board member, our treasurer, and also on our committee. We have Karen Nelson, who is our vice president, and obviously a board member, and also on our committee. We have the Sharon Brothers, who is a board member. And we have Vanessa Zor, who will be making a presentation. We have a few other board members scattered throughout the audience here, but I want to thank the board for giving us this opportunity to explain the proposal that we have in front of you. And I want to thank everybody who's shown up tonight. Regardless of your comments, it's wonderful to have the public involved in this process. Vanessa, if you can.
You don't have to stand at the podium. If you want to stand to the side so you can address both, that's fine too. And then whichever you're comfortable with.
Thank you all for coming to learn about this extraordinary opportunity to save an international treasure that is also an essential element to Glencoe's history as well. GHS has been working very hard with both the Glencoe Park District and the Village of Glencoe in this important, unique opportunity, an intra-community partnership that will benefit the entire community. I wanted to start just to give you a timeline and maybe a background of why the Glencoe Historical Society got involved with the project and why we are here tonight. The owners of the property closed on that property in the spring of last year. They purchased the property for the purpose of developing on that property and had no use for the Booth Cottage. And when they went in for the permit to demolish the property, that is when the Glencoe Historical Society and the Glencoe Preservation Commission stepped in and started to work with the owners of the property to try to save this cottage. They were given a 180-day stay so that they were not able to file for that demolition permit. And that time gave us, that 180 days gave us time to not only get our team together, but also start getting funding together and, more importantly, figure out where we were going to put the Booth Cottage. There were a lot of different options that we were discussing. There was a lot of options, and we then, in October, approached the Park District to see if we could partner together and put the Booth Cottage on one of the Park District parks. That 180 The 180-day hold has come and gone, which makes this process very timely, because at any time now they can file for the demolition permit. So that's why it is very timely for us to move the cottage and restore it on its new property, hopefully on Park 7N. The small house was built and designed by Frank Lloyd Wright for Sherman and Elizabeth Booth. Let me go back to that picture, because that's an interesting picture. It was built for their children as a temporary home while their larger home was being built on Sylvan Avenue. They lived in Glencoe. Sherman Booth was Frank Lloyd Wright's attorney and one of the founding members of the Glencoe Park District. Elizabeth Booth was very involved in the community as well, and she was one of the important leaders of the suffragette movement. The family lived in the cottage from 1913 to 1915. And given that this is the Glencoe Historical Society's mission to protect Glencoe's history and heritage by preserving objects and, of course, homes like the Booth Cottage. This shows you the different locations of the cottage. Here you can see this is where the Booth Cottage was originally placed as the temporary house while their larger home was being built. The new location in Park 7N, which is here, would be the new home for the cottage. And the new location is the natural home for the cottage because it is adjacent to the Ravine Bluffs. The development with six houses, two Frank Lloyd Wright markers, and the Frank Lloyd Wright Ravine Bridge. Sherman Booth's original plan was to create a subdivision with 25 houses, all designed by Frank Lloyd Wright. This cottage was sold to another family and moved from its original location to where it sits now on Franklin Road. In the decades that followed, additions and changes were made to the cottage. The Glencoe Historical Society will remove these extraneous elements, like the garage, the front carport, and bring it back to its original design. The footprint of the cottage will then be merely 21 feet by 51 feet. As part of the process, we will also seek certified landmark status from the village to protect the home in the future. This drawing illustrates the proposed location of the cottage in Park N and the possible paths for moving the cottage onto the property. We, at the Historical Society, are very aware of the water issues that the park has seasonally, and we are working with a civil engineer to alleviate those problems. Not only will the water be, the issue will be alleviated around the Booth Cottage, but possibly in the remaining portions of the park as well. This image is a rendering of what the final design Booth Cottage will look like in Park 7N. The cottage will not become an active community center, so I really want to reiterate that. We will not be using this on a regular basis. So it will be used maybe monthly and for just special programs that we might have. GHS will continue to use the property on Park Avenue as our main meeting area, so that the traffic that you may encounter will be very minimal. Any parking that we will need will be done on the Old Green Bay Road commuter parking area. So it should not affect traffic at all in the neighborhood. Also, I wanted to talk about the cost for the relocation and the restoration. No public funding will be used for this project. The Glencoe Historical Society has received private donations and grants for this project, so no public funding will be needed for the project. And saving this cottage maintains Glencoe as the third largest number of Frank Lloyd Wright structures in the world. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I presume, Ed, that is the you're not going to add anything to that presentation. Okay. So I will now invite Peter Van Vechten, who is the chair of the Village of Glencoe Historic Preservation Commission, to give the commission's recommendation. So Peter Van Vechten, welcome. Thank you. Sorry. Will do.
You should have said that in the mic.
Good evening. My name is Peter Van Vechten. My wife and I live at 1023 Meadow Road. As a retired architect, I'm chair of the Glencoe Preservation Commission and a homeowner in Ravine Bluffs. I will offer some comments from these two perspectives, preservation and neighbor. Frank Lloyd Wright was generally considered America's greatest architect. His designs were innovative and challenged conventional thinking. Even today, some 60 years after his death, his designs can still cause controversy. Ravine Bluffs is a source of pride for Glencoe, and in fact, it's unique in the world. It was the first Wright Designs subdivision that was built. While the houses, the entry monuments, and bridge are each important as individual pieces, the true value of Ravine Bluffs is in the cohesiveness of the entire composition. None of these elements have been lost over the last 105 years. A loss of even one part would impact the whole. The Booth Cottage has had a very unsustainable future because of the value of the land and today's lifestyles. When the property was purchased by a developer, a demolition permit was quickly applied for. There was considerable negative press locally, nationally, and internationally. There was great concern in the preservation community, within the village, and especially on our commission. This proposal offers a great solution for the cottage's long-term future. Preservation is quite important and is recognized as such by the village government. Quoting from the landmark ordinance, the village seeks to recognize each structure, building, object, sites, and areas in order to encourage their protection, enhancement, and perpetuation for the benefit of the village and its residents. Because of the significance to the architect village's archaeology, I'm not sure about that one here, but history, culture, and architecture, preservation is critical in this community to counteract the homogenization of Glencoe's built environment due to developer-driven new construction. Just look around us. The cottage is an honorary Glencoe landmark, which requires a six-month delay in issuing a demolition permit in order to consider alternatives for demolition. In most cases, that delay does not stop or very much hinder a developer from demolition. Many honorary landmarks have been destroyed. In 2018 alone, five were lost. However, in this case, the six-month delay worked as designed. The developers cooperated and worked with the village and the Historical Society to create the solution. But it is now 8 weeks after the six-month delay period. To be clear, if this proposal is not accepted, this house will be demolished. Time is of the essence. I see a number of preservation wins. This proposal, number one, this proposal keeps the cottage within Glencoe on a park that was originally designed and platted as part of Ravine Bluffs. It preserves the vision of Wright, the noted landscape architects Jens Jensen and Sherman Booth, the founding Park District Board member. It is a win because it keeps the original design vision and all of its elements intact. Number two, the proposal turns what was a very bad narrative of demolition into a positive. Saving the cottage will generate considerable positive press locally and internationally. It is a win for everyone involved. Number three, the proposal is a great example of how village organizations, in this case the village, the park district, and the historical society, partner together to craft a solution that will benefit everyone. This project is larger than any one individual or group. This is a long-term situation, a win, which will benefit the entire community. The Preservation Commission wholeheartedly supports this. My second perspective is as a homeowner in Ravine Bluffs. My wife and I have enjoyed living here for 20 years. There are wins for the neighborhood from this point of view as well. The proposed site for the cottage is nestled into the woods, preserving the open space of the park. It will be adjacent to Jensen's Council Room. Park 7M is a passive open space that is used occasionally for small-scale activities such as playing catch, fetch, frisbee, or even just rest and contemplation. None of these activities will be impacted by this proposal. Today, as I'm sure you're aware, the asphalt path through the park is crumbling and is often underwater. This project will correct these issues. That will be a win for all pedestrians and park users. Number three, locating the cottage in this public park not only preserves the design integrity of Ravine Bluffs, but also offers a new opportunity for the occasional visitor to experience close up the right environment and interior. It allows for educational opportunities for everyone, but especially the annual spring tour by the Glencoe second graders. I would very much like to thank the Glencoe Park District for your leadership, assistance, and willingness to be part of this win-win-win-win-win project. My wife and I strongly support this proposal to save and relocate the cottage at 7M. Please vote yes for this proposal. Thank you.
Thank you, Peter. All right, so now comes time for public comments that again will be,
Yep.
Here we go. That will be, that's not.
I think it was on.
Was it?
For you, too, yeah. Testing, one, two.
Boop. Okay.
I told
so at this point I should introduce myself. I'm Lisa Brooks. For those who don't know me, I'm the president of the Board of Commissioners. This is the time where we will entertain comments. Limited to 3 minutes. I'll just signal you. I don't mean to be a bully. Just signal you that time has run out so you can wind up your comments. It is not a Q&A. It's not a time where you ask us questions. It's a time for you to express your thoughts. And I will instruct commissioners, all the commissioners, if you are hearing a question or a comment that hasn't already been answered in our discussions, that you would like to ask when we have our discussion after comments, please make note of that, and then we will, hopefully you will stay, GHS will stay, and we will direct our questions to them. I know Phil Crowley is also here if there happens to be a village-related question, and our executive director as well. So, with that said, do I have any yes, Catherine? Yes.
After we're done making comments tonight, what is your next step? Are you going to be voting on this tonight, or just what happens next?
We will be having a discussion about the topic, and if we choose to vote, we will vote. Someone has to make a motion, and we have to second it, and then we will vote.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, so Catherine, would you like to start us off?
No, I don't. No? I know that I heard who are really want to speak.
Yes.
We just ask you to step up to the podium if you'd like to speak.
Yeah. Step up. I know there's a microphone issue. Step up and just state your name and take it away. Who would like to go first? Yes.
Sure. Come on up.
Hi, at 1001 Meadow Road. We are directly across from 7N. We are the most impacted by this proposal. I was just here 2 weeks ago when 7N was being considered for a dog park. We were thrilled that that didn't happen. And now, 3 days later, I get a proposal to put the Booth Cottage on 7N. 3 days later. It would have been really thoughtful if someone had come knocking on our door, because we are directly across from 7N. We will be seeing the Booth Cottage every day of our lives from now on. And it would have been really nice for the Historical Society or someone at the Park District to knock on their door and let us know what you were thinking. This is just 2 weeks later from when you were going to make it a dog park. So for us, this is really devastating. We haven't even had time to consider this. We just know that when we get up in the morning, we look out on 7N, which is a lovely park. And that was our view. That was the reason we bought the house, was to have this wonderful view of this park. And all of a sudden, you want to put the Booth Cottage on there, and in my estimation, commercialize it in a sense. Because frankly, your paper that, or the proposal that you said you were going to be open Monday through Sunday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. every day. Is that true? You were just saying it wasn't. But why does it say? I want total clarification of that. And to me, you're commercializing a residential area. I just feel like potentially you're devaluing our views, you're devaluing our property values, especially ours, since we're right across from 7N, and that's why we bought the property, is to be across from a lovely park. I feel there's going to be increased traffic and cars parked, extra cars parked in the area. I just would love to be able to sit down with the Historical Society to find out exactly what they're planning on doing, because this is the first I've heard. Normally you take months and months. The dog park took a whole year before you made a recommendation. And in 3 days, you guys are telling me you're going to put a structure up there. It's devastating for us, and the value of our property, and the value of our views. I'm just very disappointed that no one knocked on our door, number one. Also, there's going to be a year's construction on this property. That's a year three.
I'm just signaling you.
Oh,
do not.
Well, sorry, but this really impacts us a lot. This potentially could impact our property value hundreds of thousands of dollars. You know, I mean, it's just, I don't know, but I do know you are commercializing in an area that is currently not commercialized. And also, just quickly, Maple Hill and Franklin are cut-throughs. We already get more than our share of traffic from Green Bay to Sheridan. It is a cut-through, so we're getting a share of cars that go through Maple Hill and Franklin, and there's enough traffic that goes through. I really need to understand if you are open for business Monday through Sunday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m, because that's what your information says. And you said six nights a year.
Okay. I do appreciate it, and I understand. There's a lot of people here who need to speak in the meeting. We appreciate it.
I hope you don't vote on this tonight. We're just finding out about it. I mean, this is devastating. And until I meet with the Historical Society, until I meet with the Park District, I just don't think it's fair for you to pass it tonight. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Anybody else would like to speak? Okay, come on up. Come on up.
Hi, my name is Charlie Sweat. I'm here with my wife, Kelly. We live at 246 Franklin Road, not far from this location. I did send an email with several questions and comments to the board that I hope is distributed. So I think there should be a lot of points made about this proposal tonight. I'll just make two. One, I hear people talking about this isn't costing anything and that it's free and it's a win-win. But in effect, the Park District is donating a half acre of land to put this this structure on it, and that's worth in this neighborhood about $400,000. And reading through the packet, next month's meeting, I believe there's going to be on the agenda a $4.5 million bond issue. So when you're going out and raising $4.5 million, and at the same time donating $400,000 worth of property, that doesn't seem fiscally responsible unless you've gone through a feasibility study, and that doesn't appear to have been done here. So I'll just make that one point. Secondly, when you look at the neighborhood, I think there's another 9 structures with some sort of historical designation to several Franklin Lloyd Wright structures, and they have not been given historic preservation status. So this same situation could occur a year down the road, 2 years down the road, and even the Sherman Booth house that was constructed isn't protected. So if something were to happen to that property, would the Park District then step forward and do the same thing? So I think you're going down a slippery slope by approving this particular proposal. And I would hope that we would not vote tonight. So.
Okay, thank you. All right. Anyone else? Yes, ma'am.
Good evening, Commissioners. My name is Barbara Gordon, and I'm the Executive Director of the Franklin Wright Building Conservancy. We're an international organization based in Chicago with a mission to facilitate the preservation and stewardship of the remaining built works designed by Frank Lloyd Wright. Since our founding 30 years ago, we've had much experience facilitating the preservation of Wright buildings. We help bring awareness and technical assistance to facilitate solutions to preserve these buildings. And our experience shows that preservation is always local. And there's rarely an angel donor from afar that can swoop in to save the day for these buildings. The Conservancy has long disfavored moving a Wright house unless its demolition is imminent or its site becomes so compromised that it's unmarketable. On a number of occasions, we have worked with local parties to relocate Wright buildings. And we feel that the Booth Cottage will always be in a vulnerable position in its neighborhood with little chance in its future as a single family home. So the time has come to find a new safe location. When the cottage went on the market in October 2017, we worked with the seller who had owned it for nearly 60 years in the attempt to find a preservation-minded buyer for the house. We offered help in upgrading the property to certified landmark status or holding a preservation easement to protect the building in perpetuity, but the seller did not accept these offers. We closely monitored the situation, and we alerted the press and the international preservation community last spring that the building faced demolition when its new owner filed for a demolition permit, thus triggering the 180 demolition delay for the honorary landmark. After meetings with the developer, the village of Glencoe manager, the chair of the Historic Preservation Commission, we launched a call for proposals to find someone who could move the cottage and restore it for a new use. So why is this building so important to save? Due to its intended use as a temporary house, it's one of Wright's early attempts to minimize materials and streamline construction assemblies. These concepts are central to much of Wright's later work, in particular his Usonian houses of the 30s, 40s, and 50s. His first Usonian, the 1939 Herbert and Catherine Jacobs house in Madison, Wisconsin, was actually one of 8 Wright sites inscribed onto the World Heritage List this past July, which was an effort spearheaded by our organization. On behalf of the international Wright community, we applaud the Historical Society for stepping up and offering to take on this challenging task of moving and maintaining this important building. And over the last 6 months, they have raced against the clock. They have thoughtfully considered this project, and they have responsibly conducted their due diligence. We also thank the Village of Glencoe, management, and the Park District for working with the Historical Society to find a solution that would keep this building in Glencoe just a short distance from its current location in the Ravine Bluffs neighborhood. The Booth Cottage would be the first Wright house torn down since the 2004 demolition of the Carr House in Grand Beach, Michigan, and previous to that, demolitions dated back to the 1970s, so this would be significant. We strongly are in favor of this proposal and stand ready to be a technical resource to the Historical Society as they plan for the building's relocation and preservation. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Got someone coming here, and you can go next.
Hello. My name is Erica Block. I am a city planner. I am a Glencoe resident, and I am a Landmarks Illinois Executive Board member. I'm also a member of the Glencoe Historic Preservation Commission. I would like to speak about the fact that there's been a wonderful cooperative effort from the village and with the Glencoe Park District Board and working with the Glencoe Historical Society. I think the efforts of the village and working with the Park Board have been very cooperative, and I think that this is a situation where working with the Glencoe Historical Society has been an effort for the community that is appreciative, and we look forward to hearing about your decision. The Booth House is an honorary landmark. There are certified landmarks in the village, which means that it is granted a status that means it can be limited to a demolition delay pending the village board approval if it shows economic hardship. In this case, this is a building that is considered honorary, so that could be a larger issue that the village can take a look at its ordinance if people are worried that are we going to be trying to save every honorary designation home in Glencoe? Is it going to be all the houses we're going to have to move that become honorary, that become threatened? And I think right now the answer is no, but this is also a larger issue that the Historic Preservation Commission is taking a look at, is the ordinance, to really review how it can be managed so that we're not coming up with this every single time a house becomes threatened if it is honorary designation. Overall, I would like to put my support behind this project, and I feel it's something that I hope you guys go ahead for approval. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Yes, ma'am.
Hi, my name is Deborah Warren, and I live at 1045 Meadow Road, which is right around the corner from this park. While I am a lover of Frank Lloyd Wright homes and live in the neighborhood of it, I do not have a Frank Lloyd Wright home. I would like that woman that stood up and said she'd be devastated if that was moved there. Well, she could not sell her house last year. I can't imagine how she's going to sell her house now when you put the house across the street from her house. It's going to devalue our property. That's a given. And once they remove that house and do the construction at the park, we also have two homes down our street being ripped down and reestablished as well. So I don't know if you've ever driven down Meadow Road, but it is a very narrow street. And to think that people are going to park on Old Green Bay Road is an illusion, because they won't. They will be on our street just like all the other cars that park there, to walk around and look at all the Frank Lloyd Wright houses that are on our street. They come by all the time. The street is crowded all the time with cars.
Thank you.
And so when we have one house on Sylvan being knocked down and constructed over the next couple of years, the house behind us, where the Booth is right now, torn down and doing construction, and then moving the Booth house around the corner and doing construction, it'll be a madhouse. So I am against this. I feel many of our neighbors are against this. I'm all for saving the temporary house that the Booth people had. I don't think Frank Lloyd Wright thought that it would last this long. I'm confused as to why it's become such a landmark, but again, with respect to the Frank Lloyd Wright people, I get it. But I don't want it in my front yard. I don't know who's coming to it. I've got kids. There are a lot of kids in the neighborhood. I think the reason they didn't want to put that train station right over there was because they were worried about transient people coming through there. So I'm not sure how that changes it by shoving this house here. The 9 to 5, 6 days a week doesn't work for us either. Again, parking issues, transient.
Sorry?
7 days
a week. I think it's the 9 to 5 Monday, 9 to 3, Sunday.
Nevertheless, is someone going to be there the whole time to monitor who walks in and out of there? There are a lot of too many questions and too many unanswered questions, and again, not interested in having a random house open to the public around my home, around my children. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Yes.
Come on up.
Sir?
Hi, I'm John Duncan. I live at 210 Maple Hill, about a block away from this proposed house movement, and I just want to say that maybe we need a little perspective. One of the things that makes Glencoe special are the Frank Lloyd Wright houses, and the only bridge that was ever built to a Frank Lloyd Wright design. When I moved here in 2007, my wife, Eva Serafa, moved here in 1994, and there were many, many beautiful houses here that were replaced with oligarch houses. Big stone affairs in place of attractive old houses. Well, that's, you know, I suppose that's economics, but I don't think it particularly enriched the city, the village of Glencoe. This area is the highest concentration in Glencoe of Frank Lloyd Wright houses, and the bridge, of course. And I think this just adds to what was very much a kind of disused tail end of the Long Park District area to the south of this location. And I think that folks who are saying, well, it's going to destroy the value of our houses, well, the state government's done everything they can in that regard. So I think if anything, they'll add a positive value to people's houses. And I think there will be a lot of positive play for this house. By the way, I'm not an architect. Much worse than that, I'm a lawyer. I did study under Vincent Scully, who is famous for his American architecture and urbanism courses at Yale. My daughter, 35 years later, studied under him as well. And this is a important piece of property, and it fits in with the other pieces of Frank Lloyd Wright properties in the wonderful village of Glencoe. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. All right. Anyone else? Yes, ma'am.
Sure, come on.
Good evening. I'm Lisa DiChiara with Landmarks Illinois. We're the statewide historic preservation advocacy organization. And we included the Booth Cottage on our annual Most Endangered Historic Places list in 2019, which it still is on until we announce the new list in April. We're really very, very pleased to hear of this proposed solution. We know this has not been an easy effort, and we really commend the Glencoe Historical Society for stepping up and trying to find a solution to retain the home in Glencoe, knowing that otherwise it will be demolished. There were some entities that did approach the Frank Lloyd Wright Building Conservancy, we heard Barbara speak earlier, with interest in moving it outside of the village. But we heard from many people, and I know that others on the village expressed to the village board their discomfort with this important right-designed property being moved outside of the village limits. So I really hope that solutions can be found to some of the concerns expressed by the residents here this evening. I think they need to be addressed. I would assume that the Glen Cove Historical Society is ready to do that with the Park District Board. I really do believe that, you know, the reduced footprint of the property, let's remember that what you're seeing on the location where it is today, when it is moved, its size will be reduced. So as you see in the rendering, it's not as it appears today. This is the original footprint once the additions are taken off. And again, I just want to remind everyone that Glen Cove's Historic Preservation Ordinance, as we know, has some real limits to it. So despite the fact the owners had designated this as an honorary landmark, it was not protected, and this is now where we are, and we'll hope that in the future the ordinance can be addressed to provide better protections for historic properties like this in Glen Cove. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
I don't live in Glen Cove, so I wanted to speak later. My name is Lisa Tempkin, and I spent 8 years on the Historic Preservation Commission in Highland Park. And we had these things happen all the time. We had a right house that Lisa and Barbara Gordon both will remember that was also threatened. So a couple of points I want to make. This is a really small house. It's 1,100 square feet when everything is removed. I have no idea how big the park is other than I drive by it, but it's pretty... I can't see in any way that it would inhibit the use of the park otherwise. In the fall, I'm sorry I don't know your name, but in the fall, I came to a meeting in Glen Cove. It was for planners, really, and I'm not a planner, but I remember seeing you there, and I spoke to you, and I also spoke to you. So the takeaway for me was, boy, Glen Cove really cares about the visual landscape here. And you have the height limit in town, and what makes Glen Cove attractive? It's big on charm, because people care about that. And so a historic structure is a resource to the whole community, and there is real factual data that shows that communities with landmark historic structures increases their property values. So to anybody who thinks that they're going to lose money on their property, that's not true. And my house is locally landmarked as well. So this is a resource for your whole community. I really think it's amazing that you're partnering, and I'm sure you can work through these things with the people who live in the immediate neighborhood, but good for you. You go. It doesn't happen every day. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, is anyone else interested in commenting? Yes.
I'm Jim Niasty, and I live at 258 Maple Hill. It's the White House with blue shutters at the near end of Maple Hill, very close to the park. And at the risk of annoying some of my neighbors, I'm in favor of this because I think the proposed siting is very reasonable and well considered, and it is a small house. And I am an advocate of preservation. I live in probably the oldest house in the neighborhood, if certainly one of the oldest. It's a Safe Hearth house. It's built 1911, I think. It's a voluntary landmark. So I join the preservationists who wish to preserve this property of Frank Lloyd Wright. But I have to condition my favor of this on some caveats or a word to the board. The board seems inclined to develop all of its open spaces, and I would only be in favor of this if this park otherwise remains exactly the same. No more wander paths, no more plantings, no more exercise equipment, like what is proposed for the parks along Green Bay. Leave this an open space where our kids can play baseball and throw frisbees and where we can walk the dog. So long as that's true, I'm in favor of the proposal.
Thank you very much. Yes.
I wanted to show everybody how much louder it gets when you talk right into the microphone. Hello. I came from radio, so I understand how to use a mic. Good evening. My name is John Martin. I live at 1001 Meadow. A lifelong Chicago, and I certainly appreciate and enjoy the right homes throughout our city. I live right nearby the park, and for multiple years, we've been attempting to have the park district or the city or somebody respond to the 12-month flood zone we live in this area. And so what's shocking to me, that after all these years of requesting to have the flood stop in my park, nothing has happened ever. And I get mosquitoes, I get floods, you can't walk through the park, it's all muddy, and I'm shocked that we would contemplate putting a building in a flood zone, especially one that's kind of old, tired, run down, dilapidated to the point where they're going to demolish it. So now we're going to put an old, tired building that probably is made of wood, that probably doesn't do so well in water to begin with when it's 100 plus years old wood in a flood area. So I don't know how you can even vote on anything until the flood zone is resolved, and we were advised there had to be a study done. So year after year after year, we said, could you please get rid of the floods in our yard, in our park, which is across my front door? We can't do anything until there's a study. So I guess you guys must have the study now, because nothing's happened for literally 7 years. And it's just, go look at it right now. Go look at it in May, look at it in July, look at it any month of the year, and it's flooded. So I am rather shocked on that. Knowing that there's all these resources, if somebody wants to pony up about $150,000 to impact my financial potential damage, I could talk. But otherwise, it's very unfair for you to consider doing this in a flood zone right across from my front door. So thank you.
Okay, thank you. And anyone else? Oh, come on up. Catherine. Oh, oops. No. Not Catherine.
She doesn't look like Catherine.
She doesn't look like Catherine.
But it's 2020, guys.
Yeah.
I'm here to speak both of myself and my wife, Janice Penner. We live at 167 Maple Hill Road. It's a couple blocks down. And I just came basically to support this project. That Glencoe has an unusual concentration in a small area of Frank Lloyd Wright buildings, bridge, three monuments, and everything else that's around there. So we both urge you to vote in favor of this project. I've heard the flood issues, and I walk by that project every day, and it's not really certainly not a flood zone. There's areas that water ponds, and I know with working with the engineer that the Historical Society would use, that these type of problems are easily resolvable, as I've seen over 37 years of building projects in Glencoe that I was in charge of, that these type of ponding problems are resolvable with the drain structures that would go in along with the building construction. So I strongly urge you to approve this project, and I think it's a big plus for the whole community, and it would not negatively affect property values at all. Thanks.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Catherine, you're up.
Can you hear me without the microphone? Okay, hi, I'm Catherine Schulte. I live at 1005 Meadow, which is right around the corner from there. It's very, very close to where you are proposing this house goes. I will be very honest with you. I came in here not a fan. I listened to what everybody said. My heart, I don't want to, you know, I really am a Wright fan and have grown to love it because of where we live. So all I would really like to say is I'm kind of still on the fence on this, and there are a couple reasons why. One is because of its location to the bike path. Having an empty building next to the bike path is a concern. It was one of the concerns that stopped the train station from, not literally stopping the train station from being there, but it was something that was brought up at that time, the Franklin Road train station. The other concern has to do with parking. No matter what you say, people are not going to park where they're supposed to park, whether it be by the train station or over by take-up. They are going to park in front of our house, and they're going to park in front of the Martin's house. That bend right around Meadow Road is a huge problem. That's the long-term problem that needs to be figured out. And the last thing is, I think all of us in the neighborhood, with the exception of those that have worked on this project, are gobsmacked that this is happening. And I think we all need just a little bit of time to kind of digest it. And I know your time is of an essence from a demolition standpoint, and I appreciate that, but you've also got to appreciate the fact that this is changing our neighborhood again, and that we just want a little bit of time. So thanks.
Thank you. All right.
Oh, yes, sir.
My name is David Filikovsky. I live at 246 Maple Hill Road, next door to Jim. Appreciate what everyone's trying to do here. One of our major concerns, when we have young children, is that this building will not be staffed. It largely will be open throughout the day. And there's no control as to what goes on in this building throughout the day. There are children throughout the neighborhood, and safety is of utmost concern for the young children within the neighborhood. Secondly, less importantly, there's no assurances that the structure will be maintained. If the funding is there, we're offering a 99-year lease, is my understanding. You know, who's to say that, you know, this building is nice in 10 or 20 years, is it will be when it's done. But again, my number one concern having young children in the neighborhood is you have an unstaffed building, they are open 9 to 5. You do have the parking concerns, the incremental traffic, but there's no one there to control what will go on inside. We can't control who comes into Glencoe, or we won't be able to control who goes into this house or this structure. And the impact of that is unknown at this time.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, we have some yellow.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you. My name is Mary Seifar. I hope you can hear me. I've lived in Highland Park for 70 years. I was on the Highland Park Historical Commission for 9 years. We have 3 Frank Lloyd Wright, fully restored Frank Lloyd Wright houses in Highland Park, the great Ward Willits house on Sheridan Road, and 2 on Lake Avenue in Highland Park, fixed and occupied. It was not out of the question of possibilities that my grandfather, Robert E. Seifer, who built several of his best houses in Highland Park and Glencoe, built his own house in 1910, just down the street from the magnificent 1901 Ward Willits house designed by Frank Lloyd Wright. I understand the neighbors' concerns with this. It's a small impact, the drainage, the children's jungle gyms, all of those things could be easily answered and understood and cleared on. I think this is a great addition to your wonderful community. They've said it doesn't have to be open 9 to 5. All these kinds of things can be arranged. It adds to the southern value of the whole Ravine Bluffs area of Glencoe. It is unique. A Frank Lloyd Wright house just sold in Wilmette on, was it Lake Avenue? So I think our whole community is coming alive. These were empty when I was a child, a mere 70 years ago. Now they're robust. They're robust living entities, and it's contrary to developer thought, I believe that a historical community like that does indeed increase the value of your property. And so I think this is a great idea. Congratulations. The small problems or the practical problems can be solved. And it gives you a history of his design, his concept. This is valuable information. Thank you for preserving this.
Okay, thank you. All right. Yes, sir.
Hi, I'm Paul Goon. I live at 267 Sylvan Road, so actually right next to the current Blue Tops. And my wife and I have been Glencoe residents, well, Ravine Bluffs residents for 15 years. I actually was lucky enough to serve on the Ravine Bluffs Neighborhood Association as president. So I have a deep appreciation for the architecture. I have a deep appreciation for the history. But the proposed location is obviously where I have the biggest problem. The parking situation has been hammered a couple times. And I live, you know, down from Meadow Road on Sylvan. And we certainly experience traffic. And I think this will add to that, certainly. Not to mention just traffic with regards to foot traffic, which I think will be significant. But buses, emergency vehicles, I think some of my neighbors mentioned, you know, construction going on. I think that's something we deal with in Glencoe in general. Most older communities, that's a reality. But yeah, there are a couple going on, and you know, with the proposed renovation and just the general everyday traffic that I think that, you know, this is going to produce. Perhaps there's a better location. I don't know what the other proposed sites were. I do again understand why this particular park was designated. You know, the hours I have a big problem with too, having young kids, the everyday 9 to 5, I think that's a massive safety concern. Again, the staffing's been brought up, I don't know if it's gonna be staff, you know, security and safety concerns are foremost in my mind when it comes to things like that. You know, I think, you know, we've come to be quite used to sporadic foot traffic in our neighborhood because of the Wright houses, because of the history. I think increasing it, you know, some used commercialization, that may or may not be too strong, but I do believe that, yeah, the integrity of the neighborhood and kind of the peacefulness and quietness that we experience there is going to be seriously impacted. So, you know, I sent an email to the board too. I don't want to hammer everything I did, but I appreciate the time. I love the effort, but just not in 7N. And if other options could be looked at, that would be great. And thank you.
Just really quick, I'm going to ask GHS if they could please clarify what the building, what the actual hours they anticipate using this. I know in the lease it says it's limited to those hours. That does not mean they're going to use it all those hours. Just give them flexibility. And when it's open, will it be staffed? So could GHS address those questions for the board?
Yes, it is. It is a part of the lease that shows a 9 to 5 daily limitation to use of the building. We will not be coming even close to using that building every day from 9 to 5. Currently, at our campus on Park Avenue, we are open partial hours 2 days a week. We have staff there to do research from 10 to 3 on Wednesdays, and we have a docent there for use of the museum at 375 Park, 1 to 4 on Sundays. We won't even, frankly, be using this building to that extent. So that's, what does that work out, 8 hours a week at the main campus. Figure that we're gonna be using this building less. This will be a location where we will potentially hold meetings, but frankly, we haven't figured that out yet. We're looking at a programming exercise to determine how we use each of the spaces within the structure. So we're not going to be there 9 to 5 every day. And when we are there, yes, it will be staffed. It's not going to be a building which we open for for public use without us being on the site. I don't know, does that answer that?
Is that answer to your satisfaction?
Yes.
Yes.
Thank you.
Does that mean that it would be locked when there's no one in it?
Yeah, we'll be secure, absolutely. And our intent is to have CCTV coverage with some ability off-site to monitor that, so that if in fact someone does come to the building, we're going to be able to see that, and we're going to be able to have that on a recording. So yes, we are absolutely going to make sure that that building is secured and secure.
This is related to this, exactly. Because, okay, so actually, Stephanie, let's do this. If there are any other people who wish to comment and have something to say that hasn't already been said, please feel free to stand up and say I concur with those comments, but let's try to move it forward so we can get to the board's discussion. There is one more gentleman who's had his hand up, and we'll let him speak.
Yes, my name is Robert Breyer. I've lived on Franklin Road for 30 years. I just want to say I do concur with the comments about what are you going to do about the other small houses when they come up? Are we going to save all of them and put them on this park? Have you thought about that? The term gobsmacked hit home with me because this property, you've had more than 6 months. There wasn't a plan. It's not a surprise that one of these houses is going to come up. And I have to echo the comments that other people have said. The negatives are being treated very unrealistically. If you live around here, you know that the idea that people are going to park on Old Green Bay is ridiculous. People come on the bike path and end up on Franklin Road and Meadow and Sylvan. That's where they park. It's only going to be more of that. And it's very nice that there's an angel who's contributed to help fund this, as well as the funds that we'll be paying donating Park District land. What about the funding that's going to be required to keep this structure, which is now very dilapidated? What about the funding to keep this in good repair over the years? I think the negatives have been underestimated and treated very cavalierly, and the positives of saving every Frank Lloyd Wright temporary home might be a little overstated, in my opinion.
Here, here.
All right. Does anybody else have anything they want to add? Okay. Fine. Then. Okay, so now we will move on to discussion from the board. I don't know if my fellow commissioners have jotted down some questions that they would have not had answered already. If there's something they would like to ask of Ed or, and I'm sorry.
Vanessa.
Yes. Dudley, would you like to go first?
Well, I can go first.
You're going to need the microphone.
Also relates to,
speak into it.
Also relates to the staff question. I want to make sure that the people here understand that there is a long agreement that we've been working on with respect to this building.
Yeah, they can't hear you, Dudley.
Okay.
Can you get that one, though?
It's on.
You can't hear it.
Just put it closer to your mouth.
Testing.
I don't think it works either.
Okay, let's try this one.
No, I don't think we can. I think you have to move it closer to your mouth.
Is this working? No.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, you have to put it really close to your mouth.
Yes.
Or they have to do something there.
Okay. We are talking not only about the building,
there you go.
We're also talking about an ongoing agreement with conditions. I am saying every yes is conditional, and that would apply to this building as well. I think I address this, I will address this to our executive director, since she's the person who's most familiar with the contractual agreement we'll be having with the society. And that is, if you could just touch on the ongoing management of the structure, would you be the best person to talk about that?
Yeah. Sure. In the lease agreement, it addresses that the Historical Society is required to keep the condition in, or the cottage in good condition, and it has ramifications if it is not, it's put back to the park board, and their lease could be revoked and the house moved from that site. So I have to tell you that we did our homework as far as looking into the property they already have managed. And how long has GHS managed that property?
20 years.
So we looked into the manager of that, and that is that house that was donated to them has been very good upkeep. So we have no reason to believe they would not keep this house in the same pristine condition. I also contacted the neighbors, and they also emailed me to just ask questions about how are they as neighbors, and they have had nothing but positive comments about GHS being their neighbors next to them. So we have no reason to believe that they would not keep the upkeep, but just in case they don't, some maybe leadership change or whatever, there is measures in place to address that should that become a concern.
Okay.
That was my question.
Question.
I have a question for the Glencoe Historical Society. Did you talk to neighbors ahead of time?
No.
This was a direct question for the Glencoe Historical Society. Did you reach out to the neighbors ahead of time?
The neighbors of Park 7N?
Yes.
No, it wasn't appropriate because we were still negotiating the lease provisions.
Okay. That's what I wanted to know. Thank you.
Yeah, as soon as the lease was finalized, and it was because we were still working out some of those parameters that to make sure that we held the GHS accountable to the hours and the upkeep, and to assure that they had the funds available to do this project. Once the board and GHS came to agreement, that was when the letter was sent out to the neighbors about this meeting. Oh, and there's also a surety bond that guarantees that they have the money to do the renovations on the outside of the house, which is very important to us because that's what the neighbors will see. We want to make sure that was the first thing done and that there was a ADA accessible sidewalk to the house, which is guaranteed in this agreement also. That was one other thing. That's it. Done.
I have, I guess, a comment about the timing and then a question about the water. I feel all of us are in a tough spot about the timing. I am very sympathetic to the comments about how the neighbors have just heard about this. The timeline does seem incredibly short to me, especially if they've only heard about it a few days or a week ago. At the same time, I know, because I've been sitting on the board for several years, that a reasonably exhaustive, if not very exhaustive search was done by the Historical Society. There are not a long list of great places to put this building at reasonable cost, and so the position that I believe we commissioners find ourselves in is trading off a potential permanent loss of a cultural artifact against an unreasonably short time frame. And so from my perspective, it's a difficult situation, and that's why you guys and your peers elected us to examine all these facts and to take the best decision that we can given those facts. The question that I have for the Historical Society, maybe perhaps for your engineer, is about the water. What, if anything, have you done or what can be done to ensure that if not the entire park is well drained, which I can only imagine is outside of your scope, but that at least the building itself and the sidewalk are secure and accessible.
Good evening. My name is Stan Creeney. Can everybody hear me? Okay. My name is Dan Creeney, and I'm a civil engineer in Northbrook, Illinois. We've had offices in the area for almost 35 years. and have done several single-family houses in Glencoe. This house will go through the same procedure as any other house in Glencoe. Once we're asked to proceed, we'll go out and do a detailed topography of the area. We'll send a survey crew out there to pick up elevations of the property, which includes the surrounding utilities and the storm sewer. As part of our design, just like any other house in Glencoe, we'll have to design a storm sewer system that drains the property. That'll include draining the front of the house and pretty much the entire piece of property. That'll be accomplished by extending a storm sewer from the public storm sewer onto the site, same as we would do for a single family house, and we provide drainage on the site and slightly regrade the property so the water that's on the property goes to those drains. So I feel that we will fully address the drainage issues for this property.
What's the idea for the, you're not going to put a basement under this house, I don't imagine. Will it be on a concrete slab or?
I think they are going to be putting in a basement.
They will.
That's under consideration right now. One of the things they're going to do before they confirm that decision is provide a couple of soil borings to see what the ground conditions are like and to see what the groundwater is like. They'll base their decision with a basement upon that soil borings.
Thank you.
There is a concern about it taking a year for construction. Is that realistic or is that just putting some buffers in there?
I'm Scott Chamorro, and I'm an architect. I'm on the Historical Society Board. I've been on the Preservation Commission as well as some other things in town over the years.
You cannot hear you.
Okay, I'm trying. The construction period we think will take about 4 months for the initial construction, including the move. It will be moved, it will be sitting on the site will be protected with fencing, probably within the perimeter of trees. We're going to try to keep that area as tight as possible. It will sit there until the foundation is installed. Typically when you move a house, and I've been involved in the last three house moves in Glencoe over about the last 25 years, the house gets moved to the site adjacent to the foundation. The excavation happens, the footing goes in. Usually then the house is pulled over the excavation, dome lines are dropped and the new foundation is put in, because old houses tend not to be square, so this way you're assured of lining up the foundation. But we're thinking the first phase will be 4 months. Our goal is to complete the exterior, the site work, make everything look perfect as our first priority, top priority. Then we're going to go back in for a second phase and do more renovation work on the interior. And we have to do some fundraising to complete what we want to do there. We also have to truly, honestly program for the building to determine how we want to use it precisely so that we can accommodate that within the building as well. So this has been fast-tracked in every way. And so we've been doing as much as we can. It's been a gigantic game of dominoes, where if one thing doesn't happen, nothing else happens. And we're very pleased to be at this point and urge you to consider the lease.
Thank you. Okay. So how long is that?
Let's let the board ask all the questions for now, and then we can figure out later how to address your concerns. I as a member of the board, I do hear your concerns. I think we all do, and we're trying to ask the right questions as well.
Okay, Stephanie?
I have to agree with my fellow board members. I think, you know, I've been struggling this week with this because of the timing issue. And it's no one's fault. I mean, it took us a while to come to an agreement with GSPH. And it's not that I don't trust that respect the land and the community and the neighbors, but it is hard. I do feel that, you know, we fail neighbors in that respect because of the, we're up against this wall with the demolition. So that's right. I don't really have specific questions, but just to say that this is a struggle and that we really hear you and respect everybody's opinion.
I have a question. I have a question.
So we've talked about use and hours. The other thing, security, The other thing that keeps coming up, very understandably, which I was well aware of as the discussions progressed with the negotiations over the lease agreement, is parking. Because that would be the same concern anywhere within Glencoe. I don't want to put our village manager, Mr. Phil Crowley, on the spot, and I won't necessarily ask you to speak to us, but my question is, do we have some mechanism in place where in a neighborhood like this, with narrow streets and compact housing, is there anything that we could put in place that would limit parking to residents, or limit hours of parking, or direct people to Inner Green Bay? What can we do to mitigate these concerns?
There are a number of avenues that I think we would work very closely with the Public Safety Department to work through in terms of enforcement and in terms of signage. Executive Director Shepherd's point relative to the Old Green Bay Road commuter parking that is available is a block away, and we realize that. We've spoken through this process with GHS and indicated as part of any programming that they would do, they would try to direct any patrons to those parking spaces. That being said, I think the point is well taken that people will generally park where they feel is closest to where they're trying to get, which is the issue that we deal with in the downtown all the time. And again, that's where we do have various means with the Public Safety Department where we could perhaps amend parking, look at certain areas where in order to maintain traffic flow, perhaps limiting parking between certain hours. There are various alternatives available, and we want to work very closely with both the Park District and GHS to evaluate what the best alternatives would be.
Okay, great. And one more question, just to clarify, I know you guys know this, the square footage, it's 21 by 51, I believe. Somebody said that's a half acre. I know that's not a half acre, but I'm curious. What is the footprint of this? And then the second question is, for our executive director, what will the Park District do to continue to maintain 7N in the manner that it has up to this point? So square footage, how much is that going to take up? I can multiply the two numbers, too.
It's about 1,100 square feet.
Yeah. 1,100 square feet.
The park is 43,000 square feet.
Excuse me?
The park is 43,000.
Okay, so Chris says the park's 43,000 square feet. This is 1,100.
3%.
So it's about 3%
of the park.
3% of the current park.
A little less. Yeah.
A little less than 3% of the current park. Just to get perspective, because I know renderings are very challenging to see. And then my second question is for Lisa about park maintenance. I know that people like to look out over this green space, and I'd like you to just comment on what is done in the park currently and what will continue to be done.
We don't plan to do anything else with this park. So the park will remain exactly what it is, and hopefully have, because of this project, have drainage improvements, which would be great. So we would mow the grass just like we do now and maintain the trees. There's no plans to put in any gardens or any anything else landscape-wise, except for minor landscaping around the building that would complement that. The sidewalk would be put in, ADA accessible sidewalk to get to the facility. Because if the house goes over the pathway, we have to make sure that we go around the house so to make sure that there's still a thoroughfare that is heavily used by pedestrians to get to the train station. Does that answer your question?
It did.
Okay.
It did. Okay.
Okay. I have a few more things. I also have small children, and I can imagine the concern there. I want to understand from, and just a show of hands, do those who raise the concern about the small children, does the timing of the facility and the fact that the facility will be staffed when it is timed, does that alleviate most of your concerns? I'll ask the negative. Is anyone still concerned about the safety of their children given the response from the Glencoe Historical Society?
No.
We got two or three. one, two, three. Am I allowed to ask them to elaborate?
It's up to you.
Can one of you just elaborate?
That would be me, and I would say yes.
Okay. Ms. Brooks, thank you. Can one of you elaborate about what your concerns are so that we can take that into consideration?
I'd be happy to.
Please.
Okay, so number one, despite what this gentleman said, there will be people parking on the street.
Yep.
More cars on the street, more people on the street. If there's car danger then for kids, there's random people walking down the street with our kids.
Right.
Our kids go here to play in the park, throw their football, whatever. Right now, you guys do not mow the lawn as frequently as you should. There are dandelions going everywhere all the time.
Yep.
So it's great to actually see it when the park is utilized by us anyway. But I would not feel comfortable having my kids going to play in that park when it's open and random people are going.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate that.
I'm also concerned that, you know, when people talk about with the Maple Hill interchange, all you're doing is saturating an already poor area, heading, you know, east,
right,
Sheridan, and then heading west, and you're adding, how about the fact that in passing about train tracks, more people,
yep,
more cars, more congestion, kids walking, you got
okay,
the Glencoe summer camp, so that's fine.
Perfect, thank you guys.
And what they said.
Yeah, to have young children, the precedent future use of land. Okay.
Can I just get a clarifying question for usage? How many people do you anticipate coming to the building? When we were in our talks, it was people coming in and doing research and things like that. What's your anticipation of usage at any given time? Normal usage. Just give a picture of that. Draw a little picture for what the usage would look like.
I think at this point we're not really sure, quite frankly, until we go through the programming exercise. But I mean, if we're talking a handful of people, a couple of times a month, I think that's probably more than we would anticipate seeing. It's going to be minimal, and by minimal I mean really minimal.
Okay.
Well, Scott does raise a good point. Every year, the second grade class tours through our facility on Park Avenue, in addition to going to two homes in the village, and there's a program at the school, but I don't know how many kids we had this last year. Okay, there were 150 children going through our main campus this last year in the spring.
So like during the month of April, for example, you might have 150 kids tour the building.
It varies depending upon the school calendar, but yeah, it's certainly...
For example.
It doesn't happen in a dead of winter.
And do they bus them in, or how do they get there?
They are brought in by bus.
Okay. I didn't know if they walked.
You
know.
The second grader track.
So that's a once-a-year program.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you. Sure.
Oh, yes. Go ahead.
I think we need to focus on the fact that we want to save this as a structure. It's not being saved for us to have another community center.
Yeah.
So maybe think of it as a structure being saved instead of us.
We already did. I mean, we need to
say that. That's actually not my concern. Okay, they have the church seat here, and so many people come already to look at the primary houses.
They just don't want to look at it.
And this house was never even looked at before.
Okay.
Okay, so
thank you.
Okay, so I don't want to be here. Just finish your comment.
Just that the usage is so minimal, it's not worth talking about.
Yeah. I think the problem is that the challenge is that you have the right to use it frequently, but what you're saying is you're going to use it minimally. And I can understand the residents' concerns with a Monday through Sunday, 9 to 5, and then six times up to 10 p.m. I think that's a valid concern the residents have, and I think your word and how Glencoe Historical Society currently uses its facility is certainly exemplifies what you are likely to do, but I can understand a world where the residents may want something a little bit more tangible there, and that's all I'll say on that.
Oh,
agree with that, and that's kind of what I was writing down here. And I think, you know, you're not sure about the program yet, which I guess is sort of not, but I think that was a little bit of a discomfort. Also, that 6 nights is kind of thrown out there and negotiated. We have specific concerns and put it in specific language to do that as well. Because, and I just like to know, do you have any sort of guess on what that usage would be at night? And is the reason why you're not sure of the programming due to the size, the position, or, you know, what, how do you use your facility now? You have about a hammer on, but what's the hold up on it? Not being able to give a little bit more of a description on
the reason. I'll take this one. Our current campus is used and is open.
Is it not?
Hello? Sorry. Our anticipation is that this facility is going to be used very sparingly. We're an all-volunteer organization, so we have to staff it. And our volunteers right now, our docents at the main headquarters are there on Sunday afternoons for 3 hours, and we have a different group that's there on Wednesday. And frequently those hours are shifted and closed because people are not available. In this instance, the lease says Monday through
Sunday.
You know, 9 to 5. It doesn't mean that we intend to use it. It's there to give us some flexibility so that if we then decide that we want to have it open maybe once a month, we can do that. We can't stand here and guarantee to you today it would be one Sunday or one Monday or one Thursday. Those hours are just to give us the flexibility to be able to develop that. And as I believe Executive Director Shepherd mentioned, that you did the research with our current neighbors at our headquarters who said that we were good neighbors, and of course GHS would continue to try to be very good neighbors, and as the planning proceeds, we would absolutely work with the neighborhood to make sure that if there were issues, we would resolve them.
Okay. Yes, of course. Josh, you probably can just...
I have a brief question for Peter or another member of the Preservation Commission. Can you tell us what the status of, like, the hold of the demolition of this project is? Could the building be demolished tomorrow, or do we...
That's a good question.
Great question. Can I step back, give a little context to the question? I'm going to give some context to that question. Can you hear me, John? Great. I was speaking into the mic. Glencoe has two levels of landmark status. The higher one is certified, and for all intents and purposes, that protects a structure from demolition. Require a vote of the village board to approve it. So, for example, if there's a catastrophic fire or something like that, you can take that. Most of the landmarks in Glencoe, say 95 to 98%, are honorary landmarks. That carries, frankly, very minimal protection. What it does offer is a six-month delay in issuing a building permit. That's kind of it. It was written that way so that alternatives to demolition could be discussed and explored, which is why I was saying on this particular case, the developer was willing to work with all the entities to find an alternative. The current status is that the permit has not yet been issued. They frankly were good enough to slow down a little bit to let this process continue. They agreed that they would not proceed with demolition prior to January 30th. So 10 days from now.
Okay.
So I think there's a little bit of paperwork left. Phil, is that correct?
Is that accurate? The permit is not ready for issuance yet, but it's the relatively minor issues.
Right. So theoretically, that could happen in an afternoon, and they'd be ready to go.
Sorry, on the fastest they can get this done is Feb 1?
Yes.
Thank you.
So is there anything anybody could do to stop them if they said we want to demolish it on February 2nd?
Groundhog's Day.
If they have fulfilled the requirements of the village, all the boxes, then they will have their permit, and they could go.
Phil, you agree with that? Yeah. Not that I'm second-guessing you, Peter.
It sounded like that.
Is that accurate?
It is.
The whole thing that you said.
Good. So, yeah, just to underscore that, the process, as Peter mentioned, is exactly that. And when the building, the process that the village has employed in these circumstances, or in any circumstance, is that a demolition permit doesn't get issued until a building permit is also issued. And so they go together. In a circumstance like this, where there is a 6-month waiting period, that process can commence, the review process can commence. We are going on, at the end of January, it'll be 8 months since they first filed for any permits from the village. So to that point, there are a few outstanding engineering-related issues related to the new building permit. We do not anticipate those are too difficult to overcome on the developer's part, and it could be before the end of the month, after the end of the month, we don't know, but if they're able to resolve those issues, the permit would then be ready to be issued from the village's standpoint.
And there's no discretion on the village's part about whether they could issue that permit or not?
Not at this point. I think there would be, certainly, if we were within that 6-month waiting period, but once that period had lapsed on November 30th, any additional options were ended at that point from the village's standpoint.
Thank you.
Okay. Yes, Stephanie?
To that point, how long does it take if and when this would be approved to relocate that? Do we have any wiggle room because of that time, you know, to discuss more? You know, is there anything, I guess that's a question. Or for GHO?
I think they have to know if they have a place to move it.
Yeah.
Right?
Okay, yeah.
So,
yep. I'm all set.
Okay, Josh, all set?
Good. Thanks for your patience.
Dudley? Stephanie? Okay. So this is up against the wall. This is an action item. We have about 80% of our meeting yet to be held. I am going to, it's part of our agenda, I'm going to entertain a motion to approve the land lease with Glencoe Historical Society as presented, but perhaps, and I will get guidance from my commissioners here, with the condition that we will approve the lease, but continue talks to perhaps provide clarifying language to 1D. 1D is the use section, so that right now it says Monday through Friday, 9 to 5, 6 evenings a week, a year until 10. Perhaps there is some more specification that we can have in there that would be clarifying, and that this would be a conditional upon that review of that language that we will have discussion over. So that's an option. Mm-hmm. So,
Point of clarification.
Yes.
Are you talking about limiting the number of hours a week or something like that?
I'm talking about providing clarification that aligns with what the GHS is telling us, that doesn't comply with this open-ended 9 to 5, Monday through Friday.
Yeah.
And weekends, it makes it sound, the way that language is, because it's so open, it makes it sound as if it will be occupied or used during all those hours. So perhaps we could have some more specific clarification in that language of 1D, but approve the lease now. So.
Yeah, so just another point of clarification, Lisa. So we would essentially be authorizing Lisa Shepherd to finalize the lease with the condition that, based on her best judgment, she negotiated that final clause with the with GHS, because we won't meet again to approve anything.
Yeah, but we'd have to. I think that the citizens have certainly spoken about some of their concerns here, and I, for one, understand the safety concern, the timing concern, the parking concern. I don't know if it is the board or we give Lisa the approval to limit the use. I think if you limit the use, and I'm not saying that we are going to do this, so please don't take it like that, but if you limit the use for up to, you know, 12 hours per week, between the hours of sort of 10 to 2, which are less concerning for school kids, because school kids are probably in school between 10 and 2 and you won't have them running across the street to this thing, that could alleviate some concerns out there. But I don't know if it's Lisa's job to approve that or if it's our board and we figure out a second way to meet, either email or something else. So,
well, I think you can approve the lease and then direct further negotiations on 1D of the lease that would have to come to the board for approval.
Yeah, that's
right. And that's why I'm clarifying this point, because my concern is that if we don't meet for a month, the building could be gone.
So approve the whole thing, approve the relocation of the house. That's all set. All we have to really work out is if the lease agreement has to say they can use the house 12 hours a week, and that will give them enough flexibility. We'll work with them as they do their programming on it. So maybe we won't know the answer to that question until they go through that programming exercise they talked about. So maybe a couple months before I come back with that, you know, depending on when they go through the programming exercise.
So how do... I don't understand the process.
I would have to do it relatively quickly. Is the point? Like, they would have to get back to us relatively quickly. If this is a concern that we have heard from multiple residents, we have to address it relatively quickly.
Do you have yes?
I was just going to suggest that perhaps we could add some language into the lease, since we, unfortunately, in order to move this thing, we have to have a firm legal commitment on both sides. But perhaps we could add some language to paragraph 1D that says that. That the parties will meet and work in good faith to specify further uses. We'll have to work out the language, but in other words, we can add a sentence to that paragraph that would allow for good faith future negotiations to address those concerns.
Well, quite frankly, you can always, between two parties, have a good faith mutual discussion. We don't need it. I think we have to probably consider codifying that ahead of time.
I think it's very difficult for the Historical Society to do that right now because, as I said, you know, I can't stand here and say it would be used for 2 hours every Wednesday because we don't know what the availability of the manpower is. We don't know specifically what the research aspects of it are. We don't know, we don't know those specifics. I can say that I know that for 20 years the GHS has worked with neighbors in very close proximity at our headquarters, and we really haven't had any problems with them, and if they have addressed concerns to us, we have worked with them to deal with those. And I'm very confident that, you know, as this project moves forward, there won't be those issues. I don't think there's going to be a huge usage because we don't have the manpower to do that. We need to take care of it, we need to maintain it, and we need to be able to offer it in limited circumstances as an example.
I agree with you, but this is Park District land, and it's a different story when it's the public's land, and that needs to be taken into consideration. It is a completely different story, and I think you'll be a phenomenal neighbor. I think that this is a great idea, and I think it could be a win-win. But I don't think that it's fair to compare a sort of downtown location to a residential location, private land to public land, and say, take my word for it.
Okay.
That, nobody's trying to do that. All we're saying is give us the chance.
I agree.
We're just trying to frame this.
Yep.
We're trying to frame this. And I think I hear you. I believe I do. And I think I hear Josh. I believe I do. It still requires us to have this action item. So I will rephrase it. I entertain a motion to approve the land lease with the grant. Oops. Sorry to do my hands.
I think Michael keeps saying that in your head.
Oh, well,
good. Which is helpful, so I understand it. But, it's just the timing. And again, we negotiated this contract in the days of months, except we haven't had public input until today. I mean, we've had emails, we've read through them, and we've considered them, but, you know, that's the main sticking point, and to be honest, that's been the conversation all along we've been having. So, you know, I understand we're up against this, but is there any way for us to have a session meeting after we have this conversation so that we feel more comfortable?
Well, this would be the time to discuss
right.
it. But you know that.
I don't, you know.
I mean, look, the other option
so
is you can vote no.
Right.
Right? Mm-hmm. That's quite frankly the other option. Is either, we could vote no on it based
well,
on this.
Well, no, let's clarify the process.
Yes.
Can we or can we not have another meeting in the next week to review something? The alternative would be either A, to vote no, I agree that's an option, or B, to say, Lisa, we give you, you know, we ask you to approve the lease contingent upon reducing the hours of operation to no more than 12 hours per week without your written consent.
And right, we could do that.
They can decide if they want to take that or not.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Commissioner Underdunk's gone next week, so it'd be nice to have a full
and
board to make this decision.
Well, I believe we also have to have time. Before we have a secondary meeting, we have to give enough public notice for that as well. So,
yes, we
so
do.
I don't know what the...
Well, I think I'd like Josh's, if you're really worried about it's going to be about 40-some or what, I don't know, can't do math
yeah.
fast, 60 hours a week. So you say, okay, the as of right now, the cottage hours are limited to 15 hours per week. Any further will be negotiated in a future lease. I mean that we could always put an addendum after later on if it proves that there's not a lot of 40 hours.
40, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I like the idea of, quite frankly, I forget your name who just spoke.
Karen.
I actually like the idea of us putting in a pretty restrictive use of the time and then negotiating later for more. Because I think that's probably the way to make the residents happy. Like I like the idea of a 10 to 3 Monday through Friday, which gives you guys a lot of flexibility. Maybe even 1 to 4 on Sunday, sort of mimicking the hours that you have currently today. And then if we want to expand that, we can expand that. But I think it alleviates some of the traffic concerns that the village will have because it's during business hours when not the village, the residents have. Kids are typically not in the streets between 10 and 3. They're usually at school. So I think I for one, would rather have it restrictive that we could expand than have it expansive that needs to be restricted by the parties.
I would recommend just limiting, say, 15 hours a week, and then we can negotiate what hours those are. The Glencoe Historical Society has met our provision of criminal background checks for all their volunteers.
Mm-hmm.
So anybody's coming into that building, they will have...
Yeah.
Volunteers that have criminal background checks to make
yep.
sure that nothing bad is happening to their children if their children would wander into that building. It's no different than anybody else walking down a path, running
yep.
down the path, or playing frisbee in that park. There's no guarantee
yeah.
for any of our public parks that where our kids are playing.
No,
so
I hear
the concern about too many hours. I don't think we should put the restrictions of right now trying to say Monday and Wednesday
right.
from 10 to 1. I would say if you want to limit the hours to 15 hours per week and then any additional hours approved by the executive director.
Right. Without unreasonably withheld.
Yeah, without unreasonably be withheld. That's what I would recommend if you if
okay.
you need to change that
and, okay.
to pass this.
I have a question.
Yeah.
I agree with that and then having the analyzed and negotiated at a date certain, like maybe a year or something?
Yeah, that's a great idea.
That'd be great.
Okay. We look at that area.
I will say, every contract that you have, every clause is open to be agreed upon if both parties agree.
Right.
So we don't even need to say we'll negotiate in a year, but it does force us to the table, mm-hmm. and I'm okay with that.
Yeah, good point. Exactly. So,
quick question. Our town is involved with the Open Meetings Act. Do you give notices on things?
It's 48 hours for special meetings.
And so normally we go months and months and months and months discussing things with neighbors. And this one's being railroaded through, and the neighbors aren't being consulted or their considerations given strong consideration at all.
We
don't railroad things.
Thank you.
We don't do that.
Okay, so let's go back to our discussion. All right, can we then make a motion to approve the lease, and then what language should we have in there to accommodate what we...
To amend, I would say to make a motion to approve the lease presented with an amendment of 1D to define the hours of operation to no more than 15 hours per week, and with extra hours to be approved by executive director, and to revisit this lease in 1 year to review the hours.
Okay, entertain a motion to approve the land lease. With the exception of 1D, that will have limitations on use to 15 hours per week, additional hours under the approval of the executive director, with a revisiting of 1D in a year.
Very well.
The motion has been read.
Second.
Who's motion? Whose motion?
Who makes the motion?
Hit this entire way. I would appreciate it.
So
whose motion? Who made the motion?
This is ridiculous.
Dudley?
Go ahead.
You're making a motion to approve?
Josh said second. Okay, roll call vote, please.
Commissioner Bourne?
No.
Commissioner Covey?
Yes.
Commissioner Ludden?
Yes.
Commissioner Underdonk?
Yes.
President Brooks?
Yes. Okay.
Motion carried.
Motion passes.
We take a little quick break?
Yes, we're going to take a break.
5 minute break, bathroom break. We're
moving up agenda item 11, discussion of the BINA hearings. Lisa and Carol will lead the discussion, and we have an honored guest here who will be speaking to these matters. Carol?
So yeah, just to give a little background and refresher on this discussion on the issuance of non-referendum bonds. It's been almost a year, I think, that Eric first came out and, or at least had discussions with Lisa and I at the state conference last year about knowing that the watch debt was going to be coming off, and then would be a perfect time to revisit the option of issuing new debt to kind of take its place at minimal impact to the average taxpayer in Bine Hope. So we've had continued discussions. Eric came out in June and spoke to the first time to the board and presented a presentation, and has continued to update me and through me and Lisa to the board. Most recently in December, we really got more detail when I met with Michael after the holidays of really determining that for a small impact again to the taxpayer of about $37 more than what they're paying now, we can issue over $4 million to assist in our master plan capital project list. And as you've seen that list kind of grow as we've gotten more refined estimates on the Watts improvements, the maintenance facility looking now more around $4 million, our total project looking right around $14 million that we have over the next 3 to 5, 6 years, really realizing that we needed to take a look at other revenue sources. We've had some grants that we have been awarded. We've got a donation. But ultimately, some of these longer, bigger budget items in our master plan projects, we know that we're going to have to issue debt. So based on that, and I think everybody was in agreement, the final thing really was going for the park grant, where we have the opportunity to do some significant improvements to walks and have the ability to perhaps garner a $2.5 million park grant in the process, that it makes even more sense. We have been lucky that we have not had to issue debt. In the last 6 to 7 years, we've been able to transfer from our extra fund balance reserves in corporate and the last 6 or 7 years. So we've been able to do over $7 million of projects without having to issue debt. So I think it's really the timeline right now with rates continuing to decline. I wanted to bring Eric out to really just answer any final questions that you have, kind of give the last minute update on where it looks right now with rates, and also kind of just explain the binary process, which tonight would be, the action item would be to approve moving forward the order to do the hearing at next month's board meeting. Yep. So there are specific requirements related to that, but I will let Eric kind of take over from there to give you the lay of the land right now and to answer any final questions you have as we move forward in that process.
Sure, thank you. Good evening. I am here more as a discussion with the board, but to Carol's point, this is part of the process that provides you the statutory authority to move forward with the sale of non-referendum limited park bonds in due course. So President Brooks will call for the BIND hearing. BIND stands for Bond Issuance Notification Act. It's a notice that goes into the local newspaper once, and at your next board meeting or at the board meeting of your choice, you would hold that hearing, and that gives an opportunity for both the commissioners as well as any residents of the district to speak their mind relative to the issuance of those bonds. That then, after a period of 7 days from the hearing date, that provides you with the authority to move forward, and that authority expires 3 years from the date of the hearing. So it's a fairly long period of time that you have access to authority. Relative to interest rates, it came up today that interest rates in the last 32 years have never been lower than they are presently. That's across the entire maturity curve. So rates have been a little lower back in 2011 and 2012 specifically on the short end, but if you take a look at the long end, that's what you're concerned about, given the maturity length of the retirement of the proposed borrowing. Rates have never been lower. So no guarantee that that'll continue. One of the reasons that we'd like to hold the binding hearing sooner, even though the planned issuance might be for several months from now, is to be prepared in the event that perhaps a market dislocation that's in your favor, meaning lower rates, occurs, you'll be ready to go. And so that's the preparation that we'd like to engage at this point, is to be ready to go. But at this point, I'd be more than happy to take any of the commissioners' questions. Or if I answer the questions that we're looking to answer, good.
I think we also, just to clarify, you know, we've talked about $4.125 million being the issuance amount for the purposes of the BIND hearing. As stated by Eric, the rates have come down, so that would in effect allow us to issue more for the same type of net impact to the taxpayer. So it's just allowing a little flexibility for when the final issuance occurs. And this BIND hearing is the first step in kind of going through the process with the bond rating and Moody's, getting all the documentation for the ordinance and the review and the offering statement and everything all ready to go. It just allows us the flexibility should we want to issue a little bit earlier than June, depending on the rates.
So I spoke with Lisa and Carol last week, 2 weeks ago?
2 weeks.
I forget what it was,
yeah.
2 weeks ago. The way that this ends up working out is for a dime a day, on average, the residents can get, you know, $4 million worth of projects. Given the fact that we've got the debt rolling off and the fact that it is, you know, it's at 10 cents a day, it's $337 on average for a house, it makes sense and the time is right now, especially with their debt rolling off. So from my perspective, you know, we looked at it. I wouldn't call it minimal. I would call it what it is. It is $40 a year for these folks, especially, and I like the comment we had earlier. Illinois taxes are likely going up for everybody, income tax, so every penny counts. But I do think this is a wise use of our funds at a relatively low cost. So that was my 2 cents on it.
What you said.
Yeah, what you said.
That's very well
because,
stated.
Because really, I don't like to refer to it as minimal either.
It's
$40 is $40.
Yep.
I tell my kids
strike
all the time.
Strike that from the record.
Yeah, strike it from the record, for sure. Because it's easy to kind of to think of it in like, oh, it's only $40. But you know, it's like a fat dying from a thousand cuts. So you know that. So, you know, taking that with great respect to the taxpayers, including all of our us. Yes, including us. It has some, you know, gravitas or whatever. But I agree. And this notion that incorporating long-term rates into it, the best in 30 years, is, you know, that's a phenomenal piece of information.
Yeah, we only have records that go back, we meaning the industry.
Yeah.
Goes back to 1987. However, Bloomberg today came out with an article that said you have to go back to the 50s to find that. Well, they didn't. Nobody's really capturing municipal bond rates until 1987 in this fashion. Regardless, it's a very long time away.
I wanted to echo the timing issue. I happen to sit on the board of a foundation, and we met with the Northern Trust Economic Research Group, and they were echoing the same thing, that this is the time to do it for the industry bonds.
Okay. Josh.
Can I ask you, I don't know if you, I'm sorry, what's your name?
Eric.
Do you have the presentation that is in our deck?
Yeah. It's page 18. The Piper Jaffe one?
Yeah, the Piper Jaffe one.
From the seventh.
Yeah. I looked at this before, and I apologize. I think it's like well organized, but my brain is not wrapping my head around it.
Subtract that from that.
The property tax on an $800,000 home is going to go up by $37 per year, starting in 2020. If we do this, that's what this is saying. And then go down by $256 per year, starting in 2025, as a different tranche of debt is paid off?
Correct. Those are your referendum bonds that would then be falling off.
Okay. And that's the Series 215 column that shows?
Yes.
Second column from the left. Okay. So although we would be implementing an increase of around $37 a year for 5 years.
Mm-hmm. No, permanent, in perpetuity.
No, right, yeah. Right. You're right, in perpetuity. Mm-hmm. But then 5 years after that, we'd be seeing a perpetual reduction of $256 per year if we don't issue more referendum bonds.
That could be used for other things. So the right now, the taxpayers, right now are allocating about $287 of our budget to paying off the debt.
Right.
If you issue this bond, it goes up by 37 to 324.
Okay.
About 325.
Mm-hmm.
Then you've got a bond that comes off.
Right.
So 37 of that 69 is for the new bond, and you've got 32 of that 69 is for a different bond.
Mm-hmm.
But it does mean that the budget will, instead of allocating 325 for debt payments, it allocates only 69, so in theory you've got cash to go to other places. Is that the right way of...
It's not cash to go to other places, it has to be used for bonding it.
Has to be used for bonding, okay.
Well, I just think about it in terms of when the inevitable taxpayer comes who's mostly concerned about you're increasing my taxes and that's always bad. We can point to all the things that we are going to do with this money and the quality of life that we enjoy because of that.
Correct.
And B, we can say, there is other debt that is going to be rolling off in 5 years that will, in fact, reduce your taxes.
And is that saying
it won't reduce
the taxes? I wouldn't say that.
It's not. It's
it will reduce the taxes.
If we don't extend it.
If we don't extend
well,
it.
We'd have to go to a referendum to do that.
We're not going to issue $14 million in referendum bonds.
No, we're not. Right. So it would reduce. You're right.
Right.
Just wait.
Right.
If you, so, to your point,
to beach.
The take of debt will drop off in 5 years,
always,
and that's what the schedule shows.
Yeah.
The $69 is for 20 years. It's not in perpetuity.
Okay. Right. It's as long as the bond is outstanding.
Correct.
Right.
Right.
But right now we are servicing debt at about on average $287 per house, right?
For bond and interest.
We are servicing debt for bond and interest.
Principal and interest.
In 2025, if we go through this by now and we do the bond, we are going to be servicing debt of $70. Correct? $69.
Approximately, yes.
Okay. So how do we explain to John Q. taxpayer what's going on with the extra, not with the extra, with the differential of $218 from the $287 today to the $69 below, right? You've got, that's a difference of $218, is that right?
That's the 2015.
Right, so
the effect of the 2015.
So now that we're not paying debt, what are you doing with this?
Well, I wouldn't.
That's just a...
Because, again, remember we've talked about eventually wrapping a lot of the lakefront debt.
Yep.
Who knows what our financial...
Who knows what's going to go on at that point.
Yeah.
No, we only let the county levies what is based on the bond ordinances we have on file with them. Right now we have two.
Yeah.
One's going to drop off.
Yeah.
This is the last year, but we are proposing to add a new issue, the 2020 issue, and that will take its place, not only in the $130,000 of retirement that shows now for the old lots debt, but we're adding on to that it would be approximately $273,000, because that's what our limitation is.
Right.
Per the tax cap and what the CPI is built in over time.
Right.
Which, again, the county, or the CPI was released last week, and it was 2.3. So we were in all the presentation that Eric used, he was using a 2% increase in the CPI. So that's even more beneficial.
So we have more funds, yeah.
Right, but in 2025, absent any new referendum, then taxes must drop.
Okay, the taxes have to drop. It's not like you can reallocate the funds. That's
definitely.
I was not aware of that, so thank you for that explanation. Yeah.
Thanks, Eric.
Good. Sure. That actually really...
And we don't want to wait 5 years to do it, because you got to strike while the iron's hot with interest rates.
And we have projects to do.
And we have projects to do. I'll be here.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
I was just on the board. Yeah. You get to blame me, I know. it's all me.
Yeah, 8 more years, man.
Excuse me. A part of the buying hearing, do we have to present what we're then going to use the projects to and kind of give a presentation on... Would be helpful to do that.
Yes, the binding hearing prescribes, in this case, the park code is fairly broad, and so if you state it in the binding hearing, you must use it for that sole purpose.
Mm-hmm.
So you can be very specific, or you can be a little bit more broad in nature. And now Chapman and Cutler is operating under a more broad provision, that what we have not specified in there at all is purchase of property. But everything else would be fair game.
Okay.
So what's fair game? Capital projects.
Yep.
You could use these funds, for example, to supplement your cash position.
Mm-hmm.
You must spend it on capital projects. You must agree that there's a reasonable expectation that within 3 years you'll spend 85% of those funds that are raised on capital projects.
Mm-hmm.
That's a reasonable expectation, and if you can't assert that, then there's other matters that we have to do, primarily either issue a portion that's taxable, or what the IRS doesn't want you to do is to borrow on a tax basis and invest on a tax basis,
mm-hmm,
make a little money on that.
Yeah.
Right.
So they require us to use 85% within 3 years.
Yeah.
That's correct. Yeah.
Which based on our capital projects list we can do.
No, it's a fair ask.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
question.
Yes.
Would you issue all the bonds at the same time?
That of course is your decision. From a efficiency standpoint, it is more efficient to do so. Yes. Opening up the file, so to speak, is less expensive to do once than it would be to do two or three different times if the aggregate amount to be borrowed is the same. So it would be our recommendation to do it.
Plus the timing question. Yeah.
And timing question, you know, we've...
We're about as good as it's going to get.
What would
well,
expect,
who knows? Who knows?
You know, we've kind of learned not to trust the Fed. This time last year, we would have told you that the Fed is predicting that rates were going to go up 3 to 4 times in the past year, when in fact they went down. So that's always a little bit of a fool's errand. Yes, we
agree down much more.
But yes, certainly, if we take a look at history as a guide, we've never been lower.
We're closer to zero than we are to 5%.
Yeah.
Yeah, we are.
So yes, you're right. It can't go down.
Yeah.
Okay.
Any other questions for Mr. Eric?
I have done that before, actually.
Anderson. Did I get that right?
No.
Okay.
Yeah. Any other questions?
Any other questions? Gentlemen, any questions for Eric? No.
Nope.
Further questions?
Nope.
Okay. I feel as if this is the point that we can release Eric Anderson from this room. Okay, and thank you so much for sitting through this.
Generally, you can stay for the rest of
we would not have expected it to go that long, and I apologize.
Yes,
so,
very good.
Occupational hazard.
Yeah.
I told him come at 8. He thought
we will not be using the land for the.
So I'm going to go ahead. Yeah, I'm going to go ahead with the.
Yes.
Okay. I entertain a motion to approve the order calling a public hearing concerning the intent of the Board of Park Commissioners of the Glencoe Park District, Cook County, Illinois, to sell not to exceed $4.5 million general obligation limited tax park bonds as presented.
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion? Roll call vote, please.
Commissioner Bourne.
Yes.
Commissioner Covey.
Yes.
Commissioner Ludden.
Yes.
Commissioner Underdunk.
Yes.
President Brooks.
Yes. Shall we move to B under action items in
sure.
general? Okay.
Why not?
So, Carol, I guess you will
ultimate,
talk
is
about,
it,
is this ultimate new
yes,
contract
that's,
addendum?
Chris.
So, Chris, can you talk to us about this contract addendum?
I can. So, as we previously discussed at the beginning of the whole meeting,
got another cold.
Yep. He's just he's wrecking it up.
Trail project in a format that the Illinois Department of Transportation can look at. We have to go through what's called a phase one and a phase two. Well, we completed the phase one. IDOT accepted our project. They agreed that with all the assertions that we made that we actually own the property, that we're entitled to do the project. So our phase two of this process is taking a regular construction project like we would do and converting it into a format that IDOT can look at and understand. So it's about 3 times as much civil engineering as you would typically do on a project like this for just a park district. So through this process, we have to have an IDOT pre-approved engineering firm, which is Chris Burke Engineering. We're recommending that they work through the ultimate new contract. We have a number of $46,500 as a not to exceed for the completion of this phase two. This cost was in the estimate that we provided to the board of an additional $150,000 to execute the $667,000 IDOT trail grant. So effectively, if we do not do this, we do not get the grant. So it's not an easy position to be in, but what we're getting is a much higher quality project based on the fact that we have this additional civil engineering than one might typically see. So there is quite a bit of value to this as well. So, any specific questions, concerns?
I feel like I'm kind of having deja vu that we didn't we talk about this?
We did. We talked about it in committee.
Okay.
Shall we bring it to?
Yeah.
Yes. You'd think I'd done the process after a couple
Jeez,
of years.
Josh.
I'll get it by the fourth one.
I wonder if I was, I'm not having deja vu, so I just have 2 quick questions
yes.
for you. One is that the grant money, has that been delivered already, or do we have to do this first and then we will feel
so
it will be delivered, or do we feel like it's going to be held up?
Question. So how Illinois Department of Transportation works is they become the bank, so they never pay us. So they'll take the project out to bid.
Yep.
Once it meets their standards and it's the agreed upon project for the agreed upon price that we talked about with the board, they'll basically retain the contractor. They'll pay the contractor at the end of the project. They'll bill us for the remainder. So to get their $667,000, we are on the hook for $183,000 of our own money.
Yep.
That's our match. So we will never see the $667,000 as a check.
But do we have a contract? I'm sure we have something that says...
It's a governmental agreement that we'll eventually have.
But we don't have it yet.
We are working through the process, and they don't sign on the dotted line until you agree to do the project that you promised. So they look at the phase two and they say, yes, this is what we agreed to give you $700,000 for. Here's your intergovernmental agreement. And then we go from there. We'll be seeing that at the staff level here in February or March.
Okay. Feel pretty confident about that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. I mean, this is... it's their job to give us this money.
Just a good question.
It's our job to ask.
Yep, it is.
Thank you.
So, yes.
Yep. Okay. And then, has there been anyone else that we looked at besides this one partner of Altamanu?
No, that's a good question. Mm-hmm. So when we were awarded the grant and it was made public, we basically had to go from zero to phase one in about a four-week period. Okay. So I went to Altamanu and I said, we need to work with somebody that, one, can be successful on the North Shore, two, and has a proven success with IDOT. So this firm is the firm that did the trail at the Botanic Garden along Lake Hook Road.
Yep.
So these are basically industry experts. IDOT is a huge behemoth to navigate. So for us, their personal experiences and successes with this exact type of project is why we recommended going with them.
Exactly. They when I heard they did a botanical garden trail project, you know, they have extensive experience on the North Shore. So.
You guys feel like that's the way to go and that increases our odds and the cost is not significantly higher than others?
Successful.
They are on the pre-approved. IDOT gives you a list and you have to choose from IDOT's list. So you either choose IDOT people or you don't get the project.
And there's only one IDOT person for this area?
No, there's
no firm.
This firm was well-suited because typically park districts don't get these projects. These grants aren't typically awarded to our units of local government. They typically go to villages.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So FERC was good because they understood the recreational component. They're not just doing bridges and roads.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yes, they're not doing highways. But they are doing this, but they're doing these as well.
Yeah.
Righty then. Any other concerns, questions? Okay, so I entertain a motion to approve the Altamanu contract addendum number 2 for an amount not to exceed $46,500 for the preparation and submission of construction documents for the Connect Glencoe project as presented.
Second.
Any discussion? Roll call vote, please.
Commissioner Boren?
Yes.
Commissioner Colby?
Yes.
Commissioner Ludden?
Yes.
Commissioner Underdunk?
Yes.
President Brooks?
Yes, motion passes. Okay, so then we're going to go reverse things a little bit and move on to the financial report.
Yes. We are 10 months through the financial report.
Backwards.
2 months left in the fiscal year, and we're just continuing to maintain kind of what we've seen the last several months and throughout the year. Records up, daycare's made progress, we're starting to make progress in the fitness area. And as we know, we've obviously done not really produced like we did in the last 2 years, but it was due to the rainy, cold weather in the early part of the season. So that pretty much has stayed consistent. As we get closer to the end of the fiscal year, I think camp revenues, deferred revenues for camp and for winter programs look right on top of where we were last year. So we're looking good, I think. As we go into the budget, which I also distributed to all of you tonight, don't need to jump home and read it because our Finance Committee, the whole meeting is February 4th, Tuesday.
So don't forget your budget books.
What?
I may have to be on time for work that day.
What?
I could call in.
You can call in.
Somebody else.
I am excited to be here that day.
Is everybody else here?
I am here.
Tuesday, February 2nd?
No, Tuesday, February 4th.
February 4th.
Yeah.
The committee meeting for February. Dudley will not be here, so we still have a quorum.
Will not be here.
We have three.
I was totally playing.
We have a quorum. If we could have you call in.
You call in, we're good.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then Dudley, we can meet with you when you get back.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay, great.
Okay.
All righty then.
That's all I have.
Okay, very good. So let us move on to staff reports, and the first is business.
Okay, well, we are finishing up the fiscal year. As you see, the budget book in front of you is really taking a lot of time. It looks really good, first draft. End of the calendar stuff going on. Going to the conference this week, and that's about it.
Does this include issuing the bond?
No. Yes, it does.
Okay.
It shows in there. So you'll see the proceeds coming into a capital project fund,
yep.
69, but the issuance costs are out of 140, the debt
okay.
service, and I can go over that.
No, that's, I'll read first.
And we can meet Michael as well.
Perfect.
Okay.
Recreation?
Okay, sorry.
Sorry, it's okay.
Okay, rec and facilities.
Yeah, absolutely. So yes. We had Watts Below Zero yesterday with a very well-attended fun event, and we had ice bumper cars, which were a huge hit. I think it was on social media. We got multiple rings actually reaching out to us trying to steal our ideas, so that always feels good. Very well-attended. Really enjoyed it. So the community had a great time yesterday. Fitness is going in the right direction. We had a Peloton delivered last week. We've actually had 44 members since the offering started in December. Today, we hit 200 members.
Woo! Wow. I didn't know that! You're hiding that from me.
I was hiding you.
So that's awesome!
So that's a positive direction. Again, we've got a lot of members who are on the annual who are falling off in the next couple of months. We'll be very proactive. Adam's team and Aaron. Been working hard to transfer everybody over to the monthly, but we're starting to see some traction there, so we're working really hard.
Woo!
To those.
Good job!
Awesome.
That for me.
Beach, we did go out to bid for a concession vendor, and we did have somebody bid on it. The contract worked on, so we'll hopefully have news at the next meeting, but we have somebody out in North Brooks who's been some really great ideas on
excited.
The menu. So we're looking forward to hopefully working with that so we can get up to the ball.
Very good.
I did go yesterday and it was so fun. I planned to stay like a half hour because one of us was feeling great and we stayed until 12:30. So
that's awesome.
And we got there at like 10:15.
Good job.
What makers? What out of that like percolate? You go
to I just thought online that there's no way this is possible. The company we contacted never had done it before. So they actually sent the marketing person to our event yesterday to take video.
Wow.
So it was a new avenue for that.
Was it profitable?
But it was free.
Well, that
it was a free event. So, yeah.
How much was the bumper car thing?
Sorry.
Don't ask. You know.
Was $1,900.
Oh, so you could bring them back and
have a party.
And pay. That's what I'm thinking is that you could have a bumper car party, or you could have a birthday party, or you could have something like that where you can.
We're exploring. Yeah. I will say there is a revenue side attached to it with school days off. All those kids were there yesterday, so they all got a preview before we opened to the public, so they all got to ride.
Oh, it's so good.
We've got lots of things to pay for here.
Good for them.
We do.
But yeah, it could be most probably on the too.
We're exploring it.
$2,000 isn't bad.
That's very exciting.
The cost of the goodwill that we developed.
Huge. Positive vibes for the Park District. Well done. I'm not intending to skip over Parks and Maintenance, but I want to go to Marketing and Communications just because you ran a promotion, a free fitness center the day after New Year's Eve. Was that New Year's Day? Or was
oh, my
Year's
Day. New Year's
so
Eve.
What
yeah.
I would like to propose is next year, just make it free all day, because I think that 1 hour is just kind of like, I was thinking about going as like...
Oh, it's a class.
Yeah,
oh,
no,
was
my wife went to it.
Yeah, it was
she
a class.
Loved it, and she bought a pass to do rowing. Now.
Okay, so this
so
is it.
She
yeah.
did love
getting
the class.
People in, just at that New Year's time,
yeah,
where people feel like...
Oh, good. She got
so it was
really
the class
good.
That you
yeah,
tried out different things and then... Yeah.
For like
so something around that New Year's Eve, New Year's Day time is a really good time to get people motivated to like, this is I'm going to start exercising. Get them in there and maybe they'll like it.
Well, that's
so
what it was. It was like $2, right? They could do a free check out the fitness center and then convert it into $2.
It was just for that 1 hour. And that's, okay, so just...
It was a class.
Yeah, okay, so
awesome.
Consider that next year. I thought it was great. Okay. You can finish anything else you have to say about marketing communications.
I am representing the village on the census committee.
Ooh.
We're helping with communication for that one.
All right.
So we will be getting
it out
on
that. Wow. Cool. Okay, parks and maintenance.
I won't keep us all. we are having seasonally appropriate weather, and we're dealing with it. Snow, cold, just lots of checking in on heaters, pieces of equipment. Had some troubles with the Zamboni, but we've been able to work through those. So any other questions regarding my report?
Can you just address that gentleman's comment? Is that our sidewalk that
no.
we don't plow?
No, that gentleman would like us to plow portions of Vernon across the street.
I don't know which portion he was. I thought it was the sidewalk
from our driveway. If you take it around to the
yeah, that's what I took it as.
Yeah,
the, front, the sidewalk
the
in
village,
front of Jacob.
Right? But that's still a village, right?
It's the crosswalk and then the area across the street. The crosswalk. He's
wait, I thought it was a train station.
No, just
no,
doesn't matter if you call. Where is he wanted to have it shoveled?
Tonight he talked about the trains, but previously it's been the crosswalk that, and then the corner of Vernon and Green Bay Road that takes snow from the village plows. Yeah, so
okay.
when the plows come through there,
yeah.
that like little crosswalk median
mm-hmm.
gets all piled up.
Yeah.
It's typically been the concern previously.
This is the new one.
Was the first.
Yeah.
I heard about that.
Oh, yeah, the sidewalk along.
I thought he was addressing the sidewalk in front of Takeoff.
I think he was.
Oh, yeah. I thought he was addressing the sidewalk parallel to Cock Park between.
Oh, no, no.
Oh, okay.
No, no, no. From the Takeoff front driveway.
He said Takeoff.
Around to
so,
the
park staff itself, the facility staff cleared the parking lot, the entrance of the facility, the walking loop, and they also cleared the sidewalk from the basically the stop sign there all the way down to the end of the park district's property.
So oh, that's perfect.
The current
yeah.
scope of what's cleared by our team, typically the front of the building is like the 5:30 a.m. for the fitness center, and then they expand out and do those other areas after Watts has been gotten open.
Mm-hmm. Got it. Thank
but,
you.
So we are doing the sidewalk in front of Takeoff.
Correct.
Yeah.
And Phil was here today, so if there was some aspect of this that he felt he should communicate to his crew that
the village does actually clear those sidewalks. They just take it as the prime location that's done first by the parks team. So
mm-hmm.
like you see our park district sidewalks are cleared, and then the village may take several hours or days to clear some of the other tertiary sidewalks outside of the parks property because they're doing, you know, the downtown area, areas by the schools, things like that
mm-hmm.
first.
Yeah. Oh, got it. Okay. All right.
Thank you.
Sure.
Very good. Thank you very much. And oh, finally, safety and wellness.
We're all sick.
Everybody's sick.
We're all
just
good.
Say it.
We're all sick.
I have an issue for the safety and wellness.
Yeah.
I was reading the executive director's report,
mm-hmm.
and the following, I want you to understand the way I read the following sentence.
Oh, God.
What page are you on?
What was it?
God,
Matt
Josh.
And Bobby were out on the beach on Saturday securing boats. At risk of floating away.
You're right. That's so. It's Jenny, you didn't catch that. I'm gonna blame Jenny.
Bobby.
Bobby, Matt.
I hope that's not what she did.
No, I was at the boat was at risk.
Yeah.
Hopefully, well, I made sure they were secured before that was good.
Be safe.
Be safe the whole time. I'm like, do not risk your life for a boat. That's funny.
Okay.
That's good.
It is 20 to 10, please do disintegrate, so I'm going to say any other business.
Oh, do I don't get mine before?
Oh.
Yeah. It's all right. I didn't want to see
you.
I stole your
phone. Oh, it kind of got accidentally got X'd out. I'm sorry.
You get 3 minutes.
I really have nothing. I really have nothing except for staff will be going to conference this week, and superintendent of marketing communication is pregnant. If anybody, I finally got permission to tell her that. Tell everybody that. So
I had no idea. Congratulations.
So we're very excited to have another recreation baby, and we're also very excited that we received an Osleg grant in this latest
Woo!
Cycle. So woohoo for Duke Park. So
Lisa,
we're very excited about that.
What is the total then for that? project?
Okay, I knew you were going to ask me. It was between all the grants and donations, 1.8.
Wow. I thought it was 1.267 million in grants plus.
Well, I'll put the donation in there. So 1.5.
It's 1.567.
But we're investing 180 in that?
Will be the total cost for the entire project will hover around 2 million. So we'll the expense to the park district will be somewhere between $500,000 to $600,000.
For that whole thing. Yeah, for a 2 million project.
Train, water, walking trail, la-di-da.
The whole enchilada.
Yes.
Cool.
So that's all I have.
Okay, but that's well done.
Congratulations.
Yes, thank you.
All righty.
Thank you.
So here's the deal. We were going to go into closed session, but
right,
because it got so late, we probably will not need to, and because Lisa, if you want to, if Josh
I'll touch
sends
base
you
Josh.
Some, yes, and Josh might send you something for you to distribute to everybody.
Yes, I can do
with
that.
Instructions,
yep.
And then we'll have closed session after our next committee meeting.
Perfect.
All righty then. Okay, I entertain a motion to adjourn. To adjourn.
So moved.
Second. Who? Oh,
all
Dudley.
All in favor.
Motion second. I don't know if it was Warren.
Second. Second. I think it was Warren. Yeah, and then it's Dudley.
Okay.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Okay.
Okay. Motion passes.